This is the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host, Sam Carroll, and today I am joined by Theo Squires, Joe Rimmer and Chris Beasley. You might be noticing that we're missing a couple of first-team stars like James Pearce and Ian Doyle at the moment, so we've pulled a couple of people in, including myself, from the substitute bench. Lads, nice to be here.
Yeah, no African nations or Copa America for us, so yeah, good to be here.
Joe, missing your usual podcast friends?
Yeah, it was nice until you called me a squad player.
I think
I'm a Blood Red first teamer by now. Well,
do you think?
Yeah.
James, you, yeah, maybe. Theo also on the fringe of the first team.
I'm an impact player, aren't I? It's Divock Origi.
I'd probably say that our strongest four at the moment is probably Doyle, Rimmer, Pearce and Ghost. No disrespect to anyone else. Around the table.
Well, you have just disrespected
everyone
else.
What a good start.
Theo's gone. Cheers, Theo's crying.
Quickly moving on from that then, we'll start with you, Theo, and today and this week, Paul Pogba. Always quick to talk, and he's been talking about potentially leaving Manchester United this summer, and you've wrote something today about the likes of Pogba and Hazard and about how Liverpool don't necessarily have any stars that will be pushing to leave this summer. How much of an impact can that have, and how good is that for Jurgen Klopp?
Oh, well, we felt all along for the last few months of the season as well that Liverpool are in such a strong position now that the players are very happy at Anfield, and Champions League wins only going to strengthen that. It's quite telling that you think in the past when players have been linked with moves, it's when they've gone away on international duty and they've said, oh yeah, eyeing that up. Paul Pogba's not on international duty. He's done it on some sort of tour for Adidas in Japan. Modern football there at its finest. But I suppose the main three for Van Dijk and the front three, and they're obviously very happy at Liverpool, signed long-term contracts in the past. Van Dijk, no desire to move on either. And it just shows how far Liverpool have come under Jurgen Klopp. Like, you think only 5-6 years ago, the litter of players that were leaving because they weren't getting the silverware they want. Even 18 months ago, Coutinho walking out. And that shows the turnaround there. Liverpool are in that good position. And Chelsea lost the star player. That's been the case. They've had to fight to hold on to him for so long now. Paul Pogba has gone straight in, says he wants to move. Lukaku's making similar sorts of sounds. And it just shows Liverpool and Man City, they're really secure now as those strongest two teams in the division.
Are you willing to go on record, Joe, and call it a two-horse race for next season?
I think so. First of all, I just want to pick up on something Theo said. Adidas, he said. Adidas, isn't it?
Technically, though, his name was Adidas.
Yeah, I know, but here in Liverpool, if we say Adidas, don't we?
In South Liverpool, you might say.
South Liverpool.
You might say that, but yeah. in the North, we're true to German heritage.
Do you say Adidas, do you?
I'd say Adidas.
Adidas all day, isn't it?
Just sounds wrong.
I think Adidas sounds massively wrong.
I think it's a debate our listeners want.
I think if anyone's listening to this now, they should kind of, I think, tweet at Joe Rimmer 88 or Sam Carroll 0 and share your thoughts on that.
Yeah. Is the maybe golden Samba and Adidas or what, Adidas?
What do you
golden
say?
Samba.
What do you say? On the
I think Adidas. I would say
Adidas. Yeah, there you go.
It's similar to the one. It's similar to the crisp and crisps debate that split.
Yeah, you just that
last year.
Yeah. Huge debate. Let's not go back there. Is it going to be a two horse race? Well, you know, it's quite presumptuous, isn't it? But I think it will be. I just think every other team
imagine,
in the top six seems to be in transition right now. You know, Chelsea look like they're going to serve this transfer ban, and they might have a manager in Frank Lampard who's had one season in management. United, another inexperienced manager, and seem to be signing players. Look, I don't think anyone is worried about Daniel James coming in. It doesn't exactly strike you with fear. And then
Daniel James scoring 30 next season in United's title incoming.
Famous last words. But yeah, I mean, Tottenham looks like they could lose Eriksen. It's funny because even though they achieved probably more than they've ever achieved under Pochettino by getting to the final last year, it feels like they're resetting a little bit, perhaps, in the summer. And then Arsenal seem to be also runs in that top six at the moment. So I can't see them really getting into it. So I think it is just going to be Liverpool and City. And I think for Liverpool, the one thing that they've had to stay consistent and managed to get them over that hump of losing players or at least players being speculation surrounded them is Jurgen Klopp. I mean, every season he's managed to keep that squad together with the exception of Coutinho, and he's been the one constant. So it's massive for Liverpool now. Liverpool fans know all about how United fans are feeling now with Pogba and how Chelsea fans feel with Hazard. Losing your best players isn't nice, but Liverpool have managed to get over that hump, and now it doesn't feel like anyone will want to leave. Quite the opposite.
Do you think, Bees, maybe it's the... Would you say it's fair to say that for the first time since potentially, you know, those famous Liverpool teams of the 1980s, no team, not even your Real Madrids or your Barcelonas, could potentially sign a Liverpool player or look like a better proposition at this moment in time?
And I think it could, in many ways, is actually stronger than it was then, because back then, the Italian clubs had all the money. Obviously, Rush went to Juventus. I mean, part of that was with the European ban. But even before then, Graeme Souness went to Sampdoria, you know, as Liverpool's European Cup winning captain. Keegan left to go to Hamburg in the 70s. So, in a way, it's actually strong in a stronger position, because the Italian clubs don't have the money like they used to do. And even Real Madrid and Barcelona, we're seeing Barcelona having to almost raise funds before they make these big purchases this year. I mean, I did a piece just over a week ago about De Ligt and all the noises we're hearing that, you know, he's not on Liverpool's radar, and, you know, from the financial structure of the deal. But I'd think that Liverpool, personally, I think they should be going for somebody like that, because I don't think they've ever been in a stronger position. I think realistically, if you're one of the elite players now in world football, it's going to either be Liverpool, Manchester City or Real Madrid, Barcelona. The Italian clubs aren't in that. If De Ligt wants to be the highest paid player in the world at 19, go to Paris Saint-Germain, where he's not going to be much better off than he is at Ajax or Manchester United, who are trying to throw money at it but are absolute basket case. Well, yeah, so I think there's been a real sea change the last couple of years, because players like Salah and Mane might have used Liverpool as a springboard for one of those Spanish big two. But I think that now that Liverpool are in a position where they're as strong as anybody in that respect.
It's an interesting point, really, Joe. Do you agree with Bees that this, should Liverpool be ruthless? Should Liverpool now kind of consolidate this position of power they find themselves in and try and recruit? You know, again, all the noise we're hearing is that isn't going to be the transfer strategy, certainly not this summer. But would it kind of be an idea now to go out there, champions of Europe, and try and snap up Europe's most glamorous talent?
It's an interesting debate, isn't it? I think it is tough. Like, you look at someone like De Ligt and you think, if they are genuinely... Well, if they were genuinely interested, I don't think they are at the moment, but if they were, they wouldn't have a better chance to get him. You know, right now, he must be looking at Liverpool thinking, I mean, realistically, if he wants to go and play his football anywhere, they're one of the best teams to play for, best manager to play for, best places to develop. I think the big problem with him will come down to money.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it helps him in terms of if he wants to go to a Liverpool, having Mino Raiola as his agent. You know, all they seem to be interested in is getting him the best wage and perhaps going to the club that gives him the biggest signing on fee for the agent. So I doubt that will happen for those reasons, but it is tough, and I don't think Liverpool will go out and spend big this summer. It just doesn't seem to be... I know last season felt different, but it doesn't seem to be Klopp's way. He doesn't go out and just buy players for the sake of it. And that's served Klopp very well throughout his career, so why go against that mantra when, you know, it's done him well? So yeah, it's a difficult one, because they are in the best position they've been in many, many years, but I don't think you just go out and buy anyone. And to be honest, you could probably list the players on one hand that can improve this team, because there aren't many.
And obviously then that leads on nicely to the next point, that the transfer conundrum that Jurgen Klopp faces this summer. Theo is trying to bring in players who can kind of supplement the squad and play second fiddle in some respects, and probably the biggest example of that is going to be replacing Simon Mignolet should he leave in the summer. How difficult is it to try and kind of find someone who's got the quality to represent a club like Liverpool, but then also when you're sitting down to open negotiations and talk cut through contracts, you're kind of saying, but look, you're going to spend most of the season sitting on the bench behind, you know, at the moment, potentially the world's best goalkeeper?
It's more about mentality, I think, than quality, because any player would want to join Liverpool. But you have to have that right attitude. Like, there were doubts about Shaqiri having that right attitude, and I think he's proven those doubters wrong. And we've seen it, Sturridge in the past. It's maybe last chance saloon at these big clubs. That's the sort of player you can get. He was thinking, well, the champions of Europe, they're going for a Premier League title, and they want that silverware more, and to take the opportunity to be something part of something that's turning out to be really special. Liverpool will be in seven competitions, so there will be a lot of opportunities there. I think Mignolet only made 2-3 appearances last season. Well, with the extra competitions, you can imagine a new substitute goalkeeper will get a few more. But if you're there and you really buy into what Jurgen Klopp is about, what Liverpool is about, you will get the opportunities. And it is just about having that squad that works really well together. Like with your last point about, just picking off the best talents. Well, remember Real Madrid doing that in the early noughties when they properly went for it with the Galacticos. It was only when they decided they wanted the biggest names that it sort of became unstuck when they signed David Beckham and let Claude Makélélé go. It isn't about the names. It's about having the best team, having the best squad. It's all about mentality.
Mm-hmm. Because you're a traditional football man. Obviously, do you agree with Liverpool going out and potentially signing a second choice goalkeeper who's not going to do a lot but probably get paid upwards of £30,000-£40,000 a week? Or do you think it's more a case now, you know, they've got a few talented second choice goalkeepers? I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce Kelleher's
first name. No.
Keevan?
I think it's very similar to Kiever O'Neill, isn't it?
So they've got Keevan Kelleher, they've got Kamil Grabara. Would you prefer to see someone like that given a chance, or do you think that it's still a crucial role in modern football to have an established second choice?
Yeah, it's a tough one for whoever comes in, but I think Liverpool would want to have somebody who they could depend on. I mean, it's like the old vice president United States, only a heartbeat away from the White House, and it'd be the same in football terms. If anything did happen to Alisson, I mean, he was pretty decent fitness wise in his first year at England, but you know, if he ever picked up a knock or something, whoever came in would have to potentially be number one for X amount of time. So I think they wouldn't risk just having a young kid on the bench. They'd want to have somebody established in there. And yeah, I think you'd still be able to get somebody pretty decent, even if they did know that they'd be number, certainly start as number two, because I just think that, like Theo said, it's an opportunity to be around one of the top sides in European football, and you know, you fancy chances to you know, if you do get an opportunity in one of those many competitions.
Agree with that, Joe?
Yeah, well, I wrote that piece today about Mignolet, and I think
all about you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all about me. And I think it is very difficult for Liverpool to replace him. It's funny because like people sneer, and you know, the amount of Twitter responses I've had to tell me how rubbish Mignolet is. Well, you know what, look at all the other clubs in the league and find me a number two as experienced and as good as Mignolet is. There aren't many. Obviously Claudio Bravo, when he's fit, you'd probably say him for Man City, but then he didn't have a good time of things, did he, when he was there for first choice? Caballero is Chelsea's, I think, and then they've got Rob Green, who's just retired. So it's tough, and I think with Mignolet, Liverpool have been lucky because he's a first choice goalkeeper who's been made to stick around. Surely he won't stick around any longer. I had one fan tell me that he was the fourth best keeper at the club after Kelleher and Grabara, who've played a grand total of zero.
If that fan is listening, that's a terrible shout.
It's madness, isn't it? And it's easy to say that Mignolet is this and that, but it's easy also to forget he was Liverpool's number one for a long time. He's played 300 Premier League games. He comes with a lot of experience. So if Bees is right, if Alisson does get injured, and let's say the worst happened and Alisson went out for 3 months, you know, you'd feel a lot more comfortable with having Mignolet come in with all his flaws, and he does have flaws. He's not good enough to be Liverpool's number one, but you'd feel a lot more comfortable with him coming in than a kid who's barely played. Yep. And I expect him to leave this summer, and when he does, Liverpool have got to find someone with similar amounts of experience who's willing to sit on the bench, and that's tough. I think they've been linked with Alex McCarthy from Southampton. Now, you're not telling me that Alex McCarthy is a better goalkeeper than Simon Mignolet. I still think Mignolet would walk into probably 10 of the Premier League teams, and a challenger, you know, name me that many goalkeepers that are better than him in the Premier League. There aren't that many. So it's going to be tough. So it's whether they go and try and buy perhaps a 23, 24-year-old who fancies their chances at one day pushing Alisson out the team, but they'd have to be a bold young player to do that. And then, or if they can find a player at the end of their career who's got a lot of experience. You know, I was looking at maybe one of Burnley's three goalkeepers, but it's tough. It's tough. I don't think there's many out there.
I think last year's Champions League final made us all appreciate Mignolet that little bit more, because you can't imagine him going in and making those size of mistakes. And like we said, he's had his faults, but he was never anything that monumental. Obvious goalkeeper I think that all Liverpool fans would love to see come back who can do that role, who has done that role at a number of big clubs, is Pepe Reina. He was a supporting role.
He's
well too old now, and I think
yeah,
that's
just gone for another 5 years.
He's not going to be playing every week, is he?
No, but he's what's Pepe Reina now, 38, something like that?
No, it's not that old. He must be like 34, 35.
It feels like he's been around forever, Pepe Reina. I mean, it's tough for goalkeepers. Like, look at Mignolet got so much stick today in my mentions, and someone like Karius, you know, he'll never recover from those mistakes. I mean, Sam, I'm told that you were a goalkeeper growing up, and you probably know you make a couple of mistakes, you're on the scrap.
Never made one.
You find yourself running Liverpool's live blog.
Never made one mistake in my career.
But, a couple of mistakes from Mignolet, and suddenly he's absolutely rubbish. But don't forget, he played for a long time for Liverpool. Terrible goalkeeper.
What you both said, really, both Theo's point about the Champions League final, what Joe said in general. He was a good goalkeeper for Liverpool, number one goalkeeper for a number of seasons. And he's probably better than quite a lot of goalkeepers in the Premier League. And I thought he was treated very unfairly. It was like the whipping boy, Karius, was brought in from Klopp's old club, and he was like his man, really. And, you know, Mignolet only may have to make the slightest error and he'd be out of the team, whereas Karius would be indulged to a lot. And then obviously it ultimately cost Liverpool the European Cup a year ago. So it was only when Klopp finally thought, I can't let this happen again, and spent the big money on Alisson, that they've resolved the problem. I think Mignolet has said as much to our colleague James Pearce last season. He said, I can accept being number two to Alisson. Yeah. Obviously, he doesn't want to do that on a long-term basis. He wants to go somewhere else, we believe, and be number one again. But on a day-to-day basis, this past 12 months, he could accept that, and he could see that Alisson was a better goalkeeper than himself. But he couldn't see that with Carrier. So it just shows you, really, that what sort of level Mignolet's been operating at.
And Klopp does have certain players he trusts at Liverpool. Theo, do you think that was the biggest show of how much he respects Simon Mignolet as a goalkeeper, that, technically in the pecking order in the summer, Mignolet was third choice, but yet it was Karius that gets sent out on loan? And I think Klopp just maybe had that feeling, didn't he? If something were to happen to Alisson, he'd rather call on the Belgian than Karius himself.
I think part of that was after the mistakes in the final, Liverpool didn't really expect to be able to find a new club for Karius, so they had to publicly show that faith in him because there was the possibility that they would have to rely on him. And then Alisson's come up at the right time, bitten the hands off there to get him off Roma, and they ended up in a stronger position than they really imagined themselves being in, having Mignolet as this number two. No one's going to begrudge him a move because he's had a long time on the substitutes bench. And you look back to Virgil van Dijk's arrival at Liverpool, that's when the defence really started stepping up. But that's when Mignolet also lost his place in the team. So those two, they've probably only played together competitively, once or twice.
Yeah.
So you think, how good would Mignolet be if he had that size defender in front of him as well? Premier League-wise, he could maybe get into a West Ham. That's the size of club we're looking at. So he's a good goalkeeper. He can go out and do a great job elsewhere.
Don't get me wrong. I think there's one more thing to say. His style never really suited Klopp's, did it? I think he wasn't confident kicking it out. And I think Karius, his style perhaps suited. He was a little bit more proactive, quite good at kicking. But Mignolet was just a better all-round goalkeeper for me than Karius. I wonder whether they'll try and find someone that has a similar style to what Klopp likes rather than, Mignolet wasn't the best kicker of a ball, but it'd be interesting to see who they go for.
Theo's thrown Pepe Reina into the hat. Is there a name that you could throw in there, either of you? It's difficult, isn't it? There's so many goalkeepers out there, and obviously Klopp did bring in, I think it was Alex Manninger, his first signing as Liverpool manager. So
39, but it wasn't his first, but it was
one of his first.
One of his first that summer, but I think there's not many. Burnley, it's an easy one to say, really. I don't watch them every week, but Burnley have got Tom Heaton.
Pope and Hart as well. Yeah, Hart, the three England.
Who's the other one?
Pope and Joe Hart.
So you wonder which one of them doesn't fancy. I wouldn't fancy Hart, maybe, but one of the other two maybe doesn't fancy being on Burnley's bench and might want to be on Liverpool's.
Kaylor Navas has been linked in the past as well. He could maybe do a decent job.
Yeah, I mean, comes with a lot of experience. That's what you want, someone with experience. Someone who's willing to come and play for the European champions, albeit spend most of the time on the bench, perhaps get a few cup competitions.
Moving on then, today is, of course, the 29th birthday of the Champions League winning captain, Jordan Henderson. There hasn't been many Liverpool players in the past couple of, well, as long as I've been watching Liverpool, who've had a redemption story quite like Henderson's, almost swapped for Clint Dempsey back in the day, and goes on to lift the Champions League. And I think now, has his stock ever been higher with Liverpool fans than it is right now?
Well, it can't be after he just won the European Cup. But I thought that for a long time, got an awful lot of stick, and I would say that most of the stick seemed to come from observers who were quite far away from Anfield. People who were actually seeing the games on a regular basis seemed to appreciate what Jordan did a lot more. I mean, you can have your exciting big money signings like Naby Keita, who might go on and become a great player for Liverpool, but you know, as we speak at this moment, he's not achieved anything to the sort of level that Jordan Henderson has over a consistent basis. And yeah, I think he's been very unfairly treated over the years, the skipper, like you say, almost chastised just because he's not Steven Gerrard. They obviously fill in those huge boots and the armband there, but even before then, Brendan Rodgers came in and he was almost like, oh, I want to get rid of everyone who Kenny Dalglish's brought in, and willing to let him go as a make weight to Fulham for a deal that never happened. But he won Brendan round, ended up getting the armband off him when Steven moved on. So, it's been a great story for Jordan, and maybe he'll start getting the sort of plaudits he deserves now.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast.
Joe, you've always staunchly defended Jordan Henderson. What do you make of his Liverpool career, and where does he go next from here now? Is he, you know what I mean, once Naby Keita, is he now finally one of the first names on the team sheet, and will Liverpool fans now accept that when at times earlier this season, certainly, you know, as B's kind of pointed out, people wanted to see Fabinho, they wanted to see Keita. Do you think now he's going to be known as that vital cog as he was in Madrid?
To be fair, I think for the manager, he always was one of the first names on the team sheet. But I think for fans, it always felt like fans thought he was expendable. But I think towards the end of the season and in some of the big, big games, his influence has told. And I do wonder now with Fabinho sort of made that defensive position his own. So freeing Henderson up to move back forward. And I think it's been a really good end to the season for him. And I wonder whether next season we'll see him start in a bit more of an advanced position. I think it suits him better. And you know, I think it's no coincidence that Henderson's move forward has seen fans sort of get behind him a little bit more. I think his quality, his work rate, and you know, the way he presses shine through there. So, look, it was great. You know, and watching him lift the European Cup, I took extra delight from it because every fan who's ever slagged him is going to have every picture of Liverpool lifting the European Cup and Jordan Henderson's big smiling face on their wall. And it just, I love it. And I love it because he's deserved it. He's never complained. He's put up with levels. And to be honest, I wouldn't say levels of abuse because I don't think I don't want to separate the two, but I've never heard him slagged off properly at Anfield.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, fans who go on the road never really have given him that much abuse, but certainly online and certainly among other observers, he's got a lot of abuse and he's put up with it. He's never complained. He's accepted it's part of playing for a big club, and he's got on with it. And he's always worked hard. He's never taken his position in the team for granted. You only have to look around at the players wishing him a happy birthday today to see how popular he is in the dressing room. He's well loved, and if you weren't moved by his sort of interview with his dad at the final whistle in Madrid, then you made a stone, because that was a really, really nice moment for him. And all power to him, and I hope he goes on and lifts a few more trophies, because he'd certainly deserve it.
The problem with him was that he's not this glamorous name, is he? We remember when he came through, he probably made the place his own 13-14, when he was that box-to-box midfielder, getting forward, scoring goals, took that to another level in 14-15, and then just as Jurgen Klopp's arrived at the club, gets struck down by injury, and he's sort of been forced to adapt to this holding midfield role because Liverpool didn't have anyone better. And it's only now, 2-3 years on, when he's gone back into that attacking role with ease, you can see, wow, he is such a good player. It's amazing that he's 29 now. He seems to have been around forever.
Yeah.
And I think his position in the squad, he's probably got 2-3 more years left where you can say, yeah, he's going to be one of the first names on the team sheet. But then when you come into the end of that, he's maybe taking that James Milner mantle in the squad. You know, you need him. He can do the job when he's required, but he's that experienced head. You can have him on the bench, you can fill in a few positions. I think it was Leicester, he was playing right back, He's willing to do that job for the team no matter what it is. And it is just great to have someone like that of character in the squad.
And today on Facebook and Twitter and our social media channels, we asked supporters about what transfer exit had hurt them the most. Obviously looking at some of the high-profile names that have left Anfield over the years, like Fernando Torres, Michael Owen, Steven Gerrard, Xabi Alonso. These were all names that continuously came up, as well as Luis Suarez. Joe, we had a range of answers, didn't we? What was your reply?
Emil Heskey. Yeah, I think when Emil moved to Birmingham,
it was a sad day.
Liverpool just couldn't do anything about it. Birmingham City came along, offered $6 million, and bullied Liverpool into selling him. And seeing Emil depart,
it was a massive offer, though, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was a massive offer. And no, Emil's my mate, so obviously that hurts more. But
was you outside the ground with your Heskey top?
Yeah.
Just crying as the black Mercedes kind of goes past you.
Yeah, it did hurt. But when you see friends depart, it always hurts. But yeah, probably Suarez, because you kind of knew that season, it felt like a bit of a flash in the pan. You knew that title challenge wasn't built to last, really. And I think we all suspected that Suarez would leave at some point, because he'd tried to leave before. And then when they missed out on the title, the writing was on the wall. He was always going. And then when he left, you kind of thought, well, they're going to have to reset. And then obviously that was the beginning of the end, I think you could say, for Brendan Rodgers. The other one would be Alonso, but I think Alonso at the time, I think we all had a bit of faith that Liverpool would kick on.
Yeah.
2009, I don't think it felt like they built towards that. And I don't think we all saw the wheels falling off the way they did. But I think that one probably had the most impact on Liverpool. But Suarez had the most. Torres didn't hurt that much because we went and got Andy Carroll. And I was also very far away from the UK at the time, so it didn't really hit me as hard as some others.
Can Andy Carroll go down as one of the worst ever Premier League transfers, do you think?
No, because he participated in some big moments for Liverpool, banging one in the semi-final. Do you remember that one, Sam?
I think I might have been there that game as well.
So, that he had some big moments. So
Big moment, you mean big moment, that one semi-final. I mean, that semi-final goal
brace
does go
Blackburn
long.
Once.
Yeah, got a brace of Blackburn, scored in the last
I do remember when he scored a double against Man City, though. I thought, because he scored now that I think back, it might have been Joe Hart's fault, but it was from quite long range, wasn't it? I remember thinking,
this
lad's got it all.
Never saving that. I thought he was the new Shearer when he scored that. I thought, they've signed a new Shearer. He's going to bang, he's going to score. I genuinely did. So he got me carried away. But pound for pound, he probably is one of the worst signings, if not the worst, Liverpool have made in terms of fee. But the worst for me has got to be Diouf.
Diouf?
Yeah, not just because, again, at the time he was big money. You expected him to be the final part of the jigsaw, in inverted commas. And then he was just he wasn't just a bad player and went through a full season.
Person.
He was a terrible person. He disgraced the club time and again, and slags the club off to this day. So
I was going to say, hasn't he spent most of his retirement getting into Barneys with Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher?
Beating France at the World Cup obviously overshadows anything that those two have ever done in their careers. But he's just off his head. But he was the worst for me. But
Luis Suarez broke Joe Rimmer's heart, Theo.
Not as much for me, Suarez, because I think there was that acceptance when he signed the contract midway through the season that, he's going to go anyway, no matter what. Just because I think one of the clauses was, this is your new wage until the end of the season, and then if you stay, it goes up again.
Yeah.
And it was such an amazing season. He obviously wanted to go the year before. It's not going to make any difference. He was playing for that move. He got Barcelona. I think 12-year-old Theo would say Michael Owen, because like many fans my age, he was the reason you supported Liverpool. He was the hero. And it's probably the first time you'd experienced a player wanting out. And it just felt like it was an exciting time to support the club. Things were picking up. Benitez had come in. And then someone you'd grown up idolising for 6 years just walked out before it even begun. And then I remember Torres, deadline day, watching him in his Chelsea blue shirt and being unveiled on a night out, drunkenly shouting at the TV, waking up and he's in your fantasy team in a Chelsea shirt. That one was just disgusting.
funnily enough, about Michael Owen, the day Michael Owen signed for Real Madrid, I remember my mum and dad were taking me camping, and so I was sat in the back of the car, and he handed me the Echo, and turned into the back and I just could not believe that Michael Owen wouldn't be playing for Liverpool, and we were going to somewhere in Wales and we actually met Michael Owen's sister's dog.
Right, okay.
Michael Owen's sister's dog.
Yeah, a woman had just bought Michael.
Said this like you had a conversation.
Well, we kind of did, didn't we? Because we were playing like...
Michael Owen's dog's sister.
Me and my mum and dad were having like a little like game, like triangle, like footy passing, and this dog ran over.
Yeah.
And this woman kind of said, I've just bought this dog off Michael Owen's sister. So...
I think you've been had there. No, I'm not buying that. Didn't happen.
Yeah. Now that I think back...
Why did she offer that up?
Now that I think back, it's all quite weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because why was Michael Owen's sister's dog completing a move? Like, why was the dog completing a move at the same time Michael was?
Yeah.
Like, if you take the sister out and it was Michael Owen's dog, yeah, you can't take it to Spain with him.
Yeah. Did Michael Owen's sister's dog run down its contract? And then going a cut price move?
As far as I remember, though, it seemed like a pretty nice dog, which would I'd imagine Michael Owen's sister would keep a nice dog, so maybe
you think there's legs in this because you think Michael Owen's sister would keep a nice dog?
I mean, like, I don't think she'd an aggressive dog. it was a playful one. It was like a big black and white one.
Do you know which sister it is? Because we could be saying it's Richard Partridge's dog.
I mean, this we could all easily stand this. Like, Michael Owen might not even have a sister.
So we'll
need
what
to
type
get
of dog was it?
I'd say, now that I think about it, I think it might be like a border collie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if Michael Owen's sister's listening, she wants to get in touch.
Why did she sell her dog though? Was it?
The woman just kind of came over and, like, because the dog had interrupted our game, she was apologising. And then she just kind of said, that's Michael Owen's sister's dog. I've just bought it.
Oh, so he's good on the ball because he's been playing football in the garden, Michael Owen, clearly.
Again, yeah. He had a natural. Bees.
Yeah, I was going to get tangled in knots. I was going to reference both of those deals, actually. I think that what they meant for Liverpool fans. Michael Owen, it was strange because obviously ultimately Liverpool had the last laugh with that one because he went to Real Madrid supposedly after the big honours, and Liverpool would go on to win the Champions League, and he ended up not doing anything in Spain and going on to Newcastle United, where he got relegated. So it was strange, really, because it sort of showed what people feared all along, that although he was a great goal scorer for Liverpool, Michael Owen has always been first and foremost about Michael Owen, and I think he's been trying to sort of rehabilitate himself with the Liverpool fans in recent years. He's taken part in a few of the old boys matches and stuff, but it's still not been welcomed back in a way that I think Torres was, although Torres was so raw at the time. I think what hurt with Torres for Liverpool fans was nouveau riche Chelsea, whereas a player would never leave United Liverpool to go to Manchester United. The thought that this rivalry had built up in the noughties between Liverpool and Chelsea had become quite a modern rivalry, and they didn't like the thought that Chelsea would be a step up. As much as it hurt Michael Owen going to Real Madrid, it would be seen as a step up at the time, whereas Chelsea wasn't seen as that. But it would actually have been an inspired piece of business by Liverpool if it hadn't been for the aforementioned Andy Carroll. They already had Suarez on the way.
Yeah.
And if they'd have just banked that 50 million at the time and kept most of the cash in that rather than splurging 35 on Carroll, which had, I suppose, the equivalent now might probably be 100 million or something like that. I think that's what hurt with Torres, but that could have actually been a really good deal if they'd just stayed their hand and not panicked to see, well, we've got to make an impact now, we've got to do something and bring in Andy Carroll.
I had a stand-up row with a Newcastle fan when Andy Carroll signed for Liverpool. I was
stand-up?
I was in, like quite literally. We were in Australia backpacking and we were at a hostel and we both woke up in the morning, this deal had gone through. It was going through early morning, something like that. And I remember we were in the kitchen talking about it. To be honest, I couldn't believe that we'd spent 35 million on Andy Carroll. And he said, I can't believe it. Why would he move down? Liverpool aren't as big a club as Newcastle. it upset me that much. I stood up and he stood up and we were screaming at each other.
It's got to be one of the worst shouts in history, that though, hasn't it? Like, how could you potentially think Liverpool?
Newcastle fans are quite protective about their club, I think, at times, aren't they? And perhaps, you know, it is a one club city. Have an inflated idea of I mean, yeah. I like Newcastle, but I do think they have an inflated idea of how big the club is.
Oh, yeah, and the goal official. I suppose the only aspect at that time would be they had more fans in the stadium, but they wouldn't even be able to say that now. But well, any other measure,
did say that too.
Any other barometer. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if they get the takeover that's being alleged at the moment, they could be challenging Liverpool in a few years' time, couldn't they? To
bring big Andy home, free transfer. Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the final part of the podcast today then, and we'll pick up on Sutton. Theo, I think you've wrote about it at the weekend. A lot of people, you know, we all get excited about transfer rumours, and I think even just today, since this morning, the likes of James Maddison and
Timo Werner
linked. There's a few other, Ousmane Dembele linked again. But do you think that maybe Liverpool have got a ready-made midfielder in Harry Wilson to take to the fore this season? I mean, he scored goals, he set goals up, he's got a sweet left foot on him. Do you think he deserves to be, obviously Paul Gorse revealed he's set to be given a chance in pre-season. Do you think if he takes that, then Jürgen Klopp could potentially see him as part of his squad this season?
I think he deserves the opportunity. He's done so well for the past 18 months in the Championship, and as I've written this piece at the weekend, if it was a player on the continent who had that return, who was that versatile at that age and at that price.
Scored those YouTube goals.
Yeah, it's someone you'd want. But it's again, he's Welsh. He's doing it in the Championship. It's not that glamorous. In pre-season, he's going to get his opportunity because the front three are away on international duty, and it's up to him to grab it. At 22, he's now at that stage where if he can't force his way in, he's probably not going to. And Liverpool have moved beyond that level now where it is make or break. But they are going to need a versatile forward, and it's going to have to be someone who is content with taking the opportunity when they get it and not starting every week. But as we've seen with so many players in the past, it takes time to adjust to Klopp's style. Jordan Shaqiri probably lost his place in the team as a result of that because he wasn't adapting as well as the manager would like. Wilson, he suits it. He's been playing it all the way through the academy. He likes to get on the ball, run forward, press players, win possession back, cut inside. He does look like a player who will fit that style. Maybe Liverpool are too big a club for it now for him. But 3-4 years ago, before they'd started this rise, when Klopp first took over, you'd have no doubts about him getting in this team. I think it's quite impressive, well, amazing really, that he's only made one appearance, same for Ryan Kent, and then, yet there's so much hype about those two. And then you look at the other young winger that's been alongside them through the whole path, it's Shay Ojo, and he made so many more. I think he made 13 appearances. It looks like he's going to Rangers on loan today. But he was the one who looked like he was the biggest talent at first, where Liverpool going for the Europa League, 15-16. He was getting his chance in the Premier League, and he looks a really decent prospect. Now you're looking at the stage where Wilson's probably moved on further than him. Maybe he could do a job.
Joe, do you think, is Harry a wizard? I have the pun lined off in my head for the whole time. Is Harry a wizard for you? Or does he need another season out? Are you a little bit unsure about him?
No, I think I personally think he needs a couple more years in Hogwarts yet. I don't. By the way, my other half's been forcing me to watch the Harry Potter films this week.
Yeah.
I mean,
what's your take? What's your hot take?
They're not great. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan.
Does young Samuel not like him?
Yeah, not just yet. I think he's a bit too young. The defeat that Slytherin has in the House Cup in the first one is an absolute disgrace. Yeah. Dumbledore.
Can I just randomly allocate points?
Yeah,
to people,
exactly. Just hands over Gryffindor 15 points because he's a Gryffindor fan.
Why can't he be the head of the FA or something? Give Liverpool an extra 5 points playing better football.
Imagine that. So,
how many films deep are you into the series?
We watched 2.5, and then the recording went off. So, I think I've got.
I always ask myself is that I'd never trust anyone who can literally have a conversation with a snake.
It's true.
You know, Harry's just walking around having these kind of conversations. But yeah, not sure about Harry Wilson. But when it comes to look back at the end of this podcast, by the way, we've covered Michael Owen's sister's dog, the Harry Potter. So I haven't really spoken that much about the actual.
I think that's what people want, though, don't they?
I hope so.
They want a bit of Harry Potter involved in their football podcast.
How you pronounce Adidas as well?
Yeah, well, there you go, with all the big issues. Yeah. You can tell it's quiet at the moment, guys. Harry Wilson, I just think his return was great last season. I think as well as he did with Derby, I think there's a huge step up to Liverpool. And again, it's another, like we covered before with the substitute goalkeeper, it's another difficult one because they've got to find a player who is willing and will come in knowing that they're unlikely to start the season in the team. they will have to battle and they'll have to perform very, very well if they want to get ahead of any of that front three. But the flip side of it, they've got to be good enough to play for Liverpool. And I just wonder, and he should get his chance and he will get his chance. And, you know, I hope I'm wrong, but I just wonder whether he's good enough to play for Liverpool. I kind of think at the age of 22 now, I just think in football now, if you're 22 and you're not playing in the first team somewhere, you're never going to play in the first team somewhere. Yeah. And I just can't see it happening. I hope I'm wrong, but I just think that the step up from Derby to Liverpool is vast. And I suppose we'll see in the summer. I think we'll find out. And I'd be very surprised if someone made a decent bid if Liverpool didn't accept it.
Obviously, Liverpool valuing him at more than 20 million. I mean, as Joe's saying, it wouldn't be bad business from the club, would it?
No, they've become masters, haven't they, of making lots of money out of players who are surplus to requirements. I mean,
Dominic Solanke being a good example.
An amazing financial model. For many years, if somebody wasn't good enough, you just sort of shift them off for a nominal fee, whatever you could get for them. But there's actual money. I mean, we've seen, particularly the way Chelsea operate, the number of players they have out on loan, and it just becomes almost a money-making exercise in itself. Players who are never going to be a first-team regular at these top Premier League clubs, they're brought in at a young age. That goes on the CV that they've been with this club, and then they get loaned out for a number of years. And then he gets sold on for a big fee. So, yeah, they would get decent money for him. So I think it's a win-win from Liverpool's point of view. But it's so hard because Liverpool is a double-edged sword because they're so good now and they're operating at such a high level. The pool of players who are actually going to improve them is very small. And like I said, the gap to bridge it is very large. If you'd been at most other Premier League teams, well, yeah, you'd be getting a chance definitely next season. But Liverpool, they really do have to be something special. So, yeah, it's a huge few weeks coming up for Harry Wilson to take that opportunity, because it's a very narrow window of opportunity in pre-season to sort of show Klopp exactly what he can do. He's going to be judged on a handful of appearances, really.
And it's not just a big few weeks for Harry Wilson. I am sure Liverpool will be making strides in the transfer market, both incomings and outgoings, in the next few weeks. And the Liverpool Echo will be there to cover them all and give the best coverage of all that transfer news. Keep checking back on the website. That's all we've got time for in this week's Blood Red podcast. Thank you very much to Theo, Joe and Chris for joining us. Please leave your comments and reviews on Acast and Twitter, and we'll see you later in the week.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.